With all that out of the way, Donna S. is going to go first and share her experience, strength, and hope.
Hi, everyone. My name is Donna, and I'm an addict. And I don't know what I am. I'm excited. I'm nervous. And I was really excited that Johnny's speaking because he's going to carry us up after me. You know, he's going to bring us up to the top. Because, of course, I try to rehearse what I'm going to say, and I never say what I'm going to rehearse. And I always start with Donna, I'm an addict, and then I try to think of something, and then I say, no, I'm never going to say that. So I never go anywhere else. So just real quick, is anyone here under 30 days clean? Raise your hand. Not to embarrass you, I just like to know. Anyone under, 6 months? A year? See, this is what, I sometimes feel like, I'm here for the newcomer, but I really feel like the newcomer gives me so much more, because with all the stuff that was going on, I've noticed with Zoom, like I have attention deficit disorder, like I'm Swiffer in my floor in the house while the people are talking, and I'm doing all this shit. And when I hear a newcomer share Zoom, it was like, I could relate to that, because I don't know, it just brought me back to why we're here, and it's really struggling, and you feel helpless because there's nothing you can do because you can't show up at his door. People reached out to him after the meeting, of course, because they set it up that way, which is really cool. But my topic here today is the sixth and seventh step. And I really don't, I want to be, hip, slick, and cool, I want to look like I have it all together. But I do somewhat, and I feel like people in my home group or the meetings, they only see me for about an hour. So I can hold it together for there. It's when I'm driving in my car and I'm doing work and I'm being, have to deal with other people that are in the rooms. That's when all those defensive characters show up, right? And I was keeping cards at work like be tolerant, patient, helpful, and drink water, just like for the water was for me, it helped me to be healthy. But what I'm going to share is a little bit about what it was like for me, because I have a half hour and I didn't bring my phone to remind me how long I have to speak. But if somebody says this half hour, somebody keep it on, please do that, because I want to hear Johnny speak. So what I'm going to share about is a little bit of how I got here, which it doesn't really matter, right? But I'm here. But I got here and I didn't do a lot of things that maybe other people did, but I could see myself doing it. I had no problem. Yep, I could do that. And I could be like that. And I was really, like everybody else, selfish, self-centered. I guess I didn't have any, what's the word I'm looking for? I really didn't know what I was getting myself into when I got here, I guess. I really didn't. I didn't think about the using forever down the line. Never. I never thought about that this would be a way of life. I was 18 years old when I got here. My warning sign was at 16. I mean, I don't know how many people went to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting at the age of 16. And I went by way of the Nut House, building 52. And with the, one flew over the cuckoo's, that's where we lit our cigarettes on the wall. And I was okay with that. I thought I would rather have been nuts. I wasn't living on the streets yet. I wasn't sticking a needle in my arm yet. I had all, those jets. I was too young. I was, who knew, right? And I went to this meeting on this grounds, and that was my first experience. I didn't know where I was. It was all womp, womp, womp. And then, I was in high school, I was 12th grade, and the chemistry teacher brought his friend in, who went to this 12-step program, which was kind of weird, because I was like, you don't drink? What kind of person are you? You're an adult, and you can't drink? So that's like those warning signs for me, because I hear people sharing meetings. This is my 25th rehab. Hello, you know, like that's your warning sign has been way back. Because that's what I look at it as, a warning sign. So anyway, when I finally got to treatment, and treatment is part of my story, because thank God for H&I, because that's where H&I comes in. And so this is 1980. I mean, I don't know if anybody thought about recovery in 1980. I didn't really know. But I remember my neighbor came in. He was part of H&I at one point. He came in and shared his story. He lived up the street from me. I knew this guy. I got high with him. He walked past my house a million times. And I'm like trying to hide. But and he's clean today still, you know? Jimmy S. I still didn't know, you know. I don't think I really knew what I was getting into. Even, I think, years down, my brain was whacked. So anyway, so George came in one day and he was sharing his story. And I do remember a little bit about his story, but the only thing I do remember is him talking about the basic tax. That's where he was at a conference and that the people were writing a book. Addicts were writing a book. That's all I heard was addicts were writing, like addicts writing a book. How amazing is that, you know? So then I tuned, like the light bulb went on. But I really led a sheltered life that first year. And then I'm going to try to be really quick because I guess I could talk longer than I thought I could. So when it came, like, we didn't have steps. You know, like, nobody talked about work and steps. But then Teresa came back from California and she had these worksheets. So I did step 1, 2, and 3, and I did a 4-step with her. And the 4-step really, I still remember that first 4-step because it got me to talk about myself, like my dirty secrets, and open up to somebody else about like what it was like, what I did. And the thing was, she was much worse than I was because she let me know about her situation. And I was like, oh, I'm insane, you know, prepared. Like, I don't know anything. I mean, like, you know, I didn't judge her, trust me, but I could see myself. I could always see myself doing whatever you did. I could see myself doing it, so I didn't judge. But I really did not work 6 or 7 steps. It was like, I guess I wasn't ready yet. I didn't know like that nothing was glaring yet. And it's really funny now because we used to have like sayings, work the steps or move to Florida, that kind of stuff. We said some crazy stuff like that. And guess what I did? I moved to Florida. So I like 7 years clean. And I was acting out on all kinds of stuff, you know? But I was really conscious. I didn't steal, like, so I was honest that way. Like, so I wasn't a thief. I stopped all that when I got clean. And I was just really a young kid. I was 18 years old and I was growing up. I mean, what do you know when you're 18? I know nothing. So, and we tried to start a lot of meetings and that was really hard. But I hear it in the rooms, like, and I've been hearing it a lot, like, you get to the point where it's that property, money, property, prestige. So, you know, I got a little bit of money. I could do things. And Narcotics Anonymous, I love to travel. And like with the first East Coast Convention, they were talking about the World Convention in Miami and the good addict I am. I got to the World Convention in Miami. And what it did for me, these conventions, is it would make me excited to go back to my home group and talk about what we did. And I would have flyers because I would bring whatever I could grab off the tables, whatever anybody gave me. I would bring it back and put it on the table in our home group. And, I love to travel with Narcotics Anonymous. There was a guy I know in recovery that I think all his recovery, he may have had a home group, but I had a feeling he might not have, but he always went to convention. But I knew him at meetings, but I thought about, oh, do you think I could do that? And I'm like, nah, I need a home group. And so what I'm saying is like my service work backslide, you know, I was making meetings, but I wasn't involved like I usually was, H&I, a secretary, GSR. And then when I moved to Florida, there was a good group of people that we would do these road trips. Like we were involved in region, you know, we did area, we were at functions, dances, we did, like we were like a core group. We had a lot of fun. We had cakes at our our home group. We didn't know we weren't supposed to do that, but it was, I feel like in fellowship, like if we weren't stealing it, we were just lifting the group up. Because everybody, at the end of the month, we had a cake, and it put it, you know, it was for everybody. So it wasn't just for certain people. And then we'd have medallions. Like, he got a medallion every day. Like, if you, because I went to a lot of meetings at one point, and I would get a medallion at every home group at the end of the month, like every meeting at the end of the month. And I had a ton of stuff. So I don't know really what I'm trying to say here with the sixth and seventh step. I know I'm not perfect, because that's why I'm here. I feel like the craziest person in the room sometimes. You know, I sit there and I think, oh Lord. And I try not to judge, because I'm always like, oh, they don't know what they're saying. Who do they think they are? But I really feel it at work more so. Like, I'm really losing it at work. And I don't know if it's because of the pandemic, but people, and I work with the public, they're driving me crazy. And I got to, oh, and this is what gets me in trouble. My mouth. I could say stuff, and I got to hold it back. And that's like a character defect. I keep my mouth shut. I say to myself, keep your mouth shut, head down, do your job. Be kind, be helpful, drink water. You know, I try because I'm like so crazy. So fear, I have a lot of fear. I've walked through a lot of fear. You know, I was with a partner that decided to use, and he was the main breadwinner, and I had to like figure out where the hell I was going. He let me take like clothes, my daughter, and we had to leave. Like, the house was on fire. And I didn't have anything. And the only thing I had was, like, I had a job. It's so weird because everything for me, and I don't know if I call it luck, but, like, yesterday, I think the just for today was a coincidence. I don't know. But I've always been very, like, things just fall into place. And I always relate it to using won't, like, I never, now today, I never think about using. I think so. You hear this, like, my reservation was if my family member died, like my parents, I'd have to use, you know? And then when I was at 91, my brother died. He's 34 years old. That was my first loss. So when he died, I think about using. And the addict showed up. I went, you know, went to meetings. I did, you know, people got me through it. I got through it clean. And I never thought using. What I felt like using was, well, no, I didn't feel like using, but, like, it's weird, because when I was buying this condo, they're like, all this shit was happening. Like, there's so much stuff that I don't even know what's going on. But, like, one fell through, and then another was coming through, and then you're dealing with this stuff, and in my head, I was like, I know why people use, because this is crazy. I feel, like, so overwhelmed that I don't know what to do. But I get it. I get it why people use, decide to use, but I don't. And the main part, I think, of all the steps, right, I get angry. But you know who helped me with that anger? Is my ex. Oh, let me get back. I'll get back to that. Because what ended up happening is when I left him 2 years later, he ended up having to live with me because he had nowhere else to go. Because, of course, he was the greatest addict ever. So he had to end up living with me, the girl he met on Facebook, OD'd and died. So you could see where that was all going. And he had nowhere to go. He's our, you know, he's my daughter's dad. So, you know, he wasn't supposed to use. He's not supposed to drink in the house, but he still did. And it was going to end, but I didn't know it was going to end like it did. And I'm going to meetings at this time. And at these meetings, I'm hearing this person overdosed, this person, that person. And it ended up that he ended up overdosing in my place. And it was, you know, I was telling somebody grief is a hard thing, right? And talk about all kinds of stuff that happens there, because you get angry, and then you find out stuff. So that was a tough one, right? And self-pity, you know, I'm big on that. I try not to be selfish, but I am. Rebellion, I definitely am. I guess fear is faith, right? You're supposed to, if you have fear, you have faith. And I do, because it always works out. No matter what I'm going through, for some reason, I let it go, and it always works out. I put one foot in front of the other. Humility, yeah, I have a lot of humility, you know, and I try, you know, and I think humility helped with me with humility. If I keep my mouth shut, I'm humble, you know, I'm not telling you what to do and or how to do it. Acceptance, I have a lot of acceptance because people are what they are. I really try not to judge because, like, all the steps are, like, combined because at the end, like, step 12, you got to accept people where they are. You can't judge, and you really can't judge. You got to, even the mental, I guess you got to really accept where they are. Self-pity, pride, rebellion, gossip. Oh, who doesn't like the gossip? I love the gossip. I love talking shit about people. I try not to do it, but I am guilty of it. I know we all are, right? It's like, hey, you know, did you hear about so-and-so? Complaining. I can complain like there's nobody's business. I try not to complain, but I complain. And the weird thing with this step is, like, I'm not a God person, per se. Like, I hear people talk. I love hearing people talk about their God. And I go to churches, like, when you're traveling, you see all these churches, and I was raised with the God, but I'm not one of those kind of people with God. And everything, it sounds sometimes scary to me, real religious-like, but it's the God. Like, that's when we do recover. It's a spiritual, not religious program, for sure, because I wouldn't be here if it was, because my eyes were rolling in the back of my head all the time when this God stuff came up. Oh, and I'm a procrastinator. I am procrastinator, like, poof, so bad, which is really sloth in 5 syllables. Okay. So in order to get 5 or 6, you're looking at 4, because you're writing down, like, all your resentments and things that you don't like about yourself. So you see that in 4. And then the 6th and 7th, which is kind of tricky. I didn't realize how important it was because I was always living in 10, 11, 12. That's what I thought was important. But your behavior is in that 6th and 7th. And if you're not behaving right, if you're not honest, if you're not willing, I guess willing is the key to this step, right? And if you're not doing that, it's a daily practice. I swear I got to look at myself, be patient, be tolerant, drink water, you know, be helpful. I try to be helpful. And being helpful is like helping that newcomer. And I, when I moved to Florida, I got a resentment because I couldn't get an H&I committee. Don't you know who I am? You know, and then I found this meeting because there's a lot of treatment centers down and they would come to this. It dawned on me, right? I didn't even realize they would bring this halfway house full of women to this meeting. I was like, oh, here we go. I could do this. It's like an H&I meeting. They're all like newcomers. So I liked that. I started going just before COVID. I was doing this. This was my H&I commitment. That's in my head. You know, this is my world. And I liked that because I felt like I was giving back. I'm missing that. When I was home with this last year, like these last 6 months, I am missing something. I'm missing that connection with that newcomer. I'm not doing that. And I kept saying, what is missing? I'm not connecting with the newcomer. I feel like I'm not helping anybody, you know? And that's what it is. You got to, in that first step, you got to get it. And I don't know how I got it. I just know, like, using won't change anything. Like Leah was sharing, I don't remember when I stopped, like, that obsessive, like, that compulsion of wanting to use. Like, I can remember saying, oh, you know what, I haven't thought about using for a couple days. And then that goes away. And I think that's the key. Because, like, you always hear when people relapse, that they have a hard time coming back, and that's because I think ego as well. But once you get it in you, it seems like hard to get back from that. And this is just from what I'm hearing other people share at meetings, and that's why I don't want to use, because it sounds worse. Or you die. And I had jails, I have institutions. My jail was juvenile hall, but I could see myself in prison. I could see it. And death. So if my only option now is death, right, if I decide to use. Narcotics Anonymous is humble. Tolerance towards others. Oh, I like this one. No member is greater or less than any other member. The drive for personal gain is the areas of sex, property, and social positions, which brought so much pain in the past, falls by the wayside. There's never going to be enough money. You know, so there's never going to be enough material things. I like become somewhat of a minimalist, you know, so I mean, like it's freeing, you know. And I think I'm who I am because I'm not the same person I was when I came here. What's that, 41 years ago? It's like a whole nother lifetime ago, you know. And I am so grateful. I can't even describe to you because I have a life beyond anything I thought I would have. And I don't, like, I was telling you, yesterday we just hanging out, driving around everywhere. It was great. I had a great time. I just like being anywhere today. Because when I got here, nobody wanted me. You know, nobody, like, they didn't tell me where the party was anymore. You know, my family, they still cared about me. But I was the one that wanted to leave home because I didn't want anybody to tell me what to do. They said, you can't live here because you don't go to church. I said, well, I ain't living here. You know, I'd rather live on the streets in the middle of winter than stay in this house. And I never been back because that was like people, places, and things too, you know, where I grew up. How long have I spoke for? Because I don't want to ramble on. Okay, so if I got 5 minutes... Oh, arrogance. I speak about arrogance because I'm arrogant as everybody else. So, like, I think I'm important. I know I'm not important, but, like, I like to think, don't you know who I am? Like, when they asked me to speak at a convention over in York, and they were, like, giving stuff out, and there was, like, something. I'm like, don't you know who I am? And they were, like, they were scared of me, and I'm like, I'm only kidding. I mean, I'm just, because you gotta laugh, because I swear if I didn't laugh, I'd cry. You know, I really cry. Fearlessness, honesty, double lives. It's easy to live a double life in here, right? Because we're not all, like, looking at each other. That's where that honesty comes. Because I like to feel like I'm the same person here. They don't even know what to make of me at work. You know, because I'm, like, sometimes brutally honest. And the process for me is if I don't like something that's going on, I got to think about it first before I say something. So I think about what I'm going to say and not just come off the... Because I called my one boss an idiot one day and that wasn't too good. And I thought about it. I really need to make an amends because he really was. But I should say, you know, I shouldn't have called you an idiot. I guess 7, right? Because I'm really confused about 6 and 7 because I feel like they're the same, right? Shortcomings... And character defects, they all seem to combine. Love, lust. I think lust was my worst character defect, you know, of all my behaviors. Envy, you know, I guess I was envious. Some people have, like, a lot of money. I met in recovery, you meet some people with a lot of money, and they seem to have it easier, where, like, you're working this dead-end job, and... I don't know, they don't really know how easy they have it or how well they have it, you know. And they complain about stupid stuff. So anyway, I think that's pretty much it. I hope I made some sense. I hope, like if you're having a hard time, like, because it's weird because I've been hearing, like, when you get some clean time and then you think you got it, like, for me, I thought I had it together. I didn't even have as many meetings as I needed, but... I got to another point in my life where I couldn't really make it to meetings, you know, because I had I was raising a daughter, I was by myself, and I would take the meetings, but I wasn't enjoying myself because she's running around, and people were cursing, and I didn't care that they were cursing, but I just wasn't enjoying myself, and I finally figured out a way to do that. I had to ask a neighbor to watch her, and I didn't go or do what I wanted to do, and that's, I hate now, you know, like, when I don't want to go to a meeting, I make myself go to a meeting, and then I'm always grateful after that meeting. I'm like, why would I not want it to go? Because I got so much out of it after I went, you know? And that's, like, I guess that's a character defect, too, of talking to yourself and go, oh, you don't really need to go to a meeting, you got this much clean time. Okay. So, anyway, I hope I made sense. I'm really grateful to be here. I'm not always grateful. And I always have an attitude, and I always have an attitude and gratitude. You know, I always got to be grateful because it always could be worse for me. I know that for a fact because I've been there. I've been there clean, and I don't know, I'm just beyond. I'm still a work in progress. I still learn a lot every time when I go to a meeting. And service, I'm on my home group is the Solutions on Sundays. We meet at 10:30. in Coral Springs, and we got some Gold Coast members here and from my area, and that's always cool. And help! I'm like one of those stubborn people. I don't want to ask for help. You know, I'm so independent, and I always like want to do it my way. You know, but when I talk to people about what's going on with me, you know, it's easier. At least I tell somebody, oh, this is going on. But today, it's really good today, you know, it really is. I really shouldn't complain. I'm here. I can afford to come here. At one point in my life, I couldn't. So I like it that it's really, like my first convention was the second East Coast convention, and it was awesome, you know. And it all started there, I guess, wanting to hear more of different people, how they do it, to stay clean and the literature and everything. So now Johnny's going to speak. Thank you for being patient. Thanks for being here for me. Have a great day.
I want to welcome our next speaker, who is John F.
I'm an addict named John.
Hey, John.
Hi. Hey. Welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. First off, I want to thank the committee for asking, you know, to participate in something of this magnitude. And what I mean by that is that the convention, that the reason, you know, for the, you know, all the money goes for is basic text for those who don't have the ability to just walk out and just grab one and come back into their cell. You know, I have a friend right now who is serving time, and, you know, one of the things he expressed to me, that the hardest part about doing time isn't necessarily doing the time, it's knowing that nobody is ever going to call you to, you know, to say hello. You have to, and there's some days you don't want to. And then the feeling of that over a period of time, and having to like learn to have some kind of peace and acceptance in that moment. So that's my little spiel. So look, this is on entirely rarely, humbly asking. I get asked to share on this step more than any other step for whatever reason. I don't know what that says about me. I don't know if that's a good thing or bad thing. So first off, this is a quick rant. Steps are written in order for a reason. We have a sponsorship pamphlet. If you are your own sponsor, you got to pull for a sponsor. Don't kid yourself. Also, if you don't have a home group, you're homeless. Don't kid yourself. Like the whole point, or for me, the importance of having a home group is that when I'm jammed up, but the ego sets in, the pride, don't you know who I am? Or don't you know how long I've been clean? Don't you know how many steps I've worked? Don't you know how many conventions I've done that tells me that I can't share what's going on in my life? Because God forbid, what would you think about me that having all this spirituality, working all these steps and such a great, you couldn't possibly, you're going to be okay. Or what will happen is I've been on the opposite side of it, where I've come up here and I've shared everything that's going on in my life, crying, like snotting the whole deal. Everybody came up after the meeting and said, bro, that was so honest. I appreciate that share. You just saved my life. I'm going through the same thing. And then left. And everybody heard the message and they forgot about the messenger. They forgot about, just because we have time doesn't mean we're less human. That like with time, there are other struggles that come along with having time. Like, you know, I don't say this other than, you know, my clean date's August 26th of 03. I got clean at 21, you know. I have 18 years, 2 months from now, and I'll be 39, you know. And I say that for like the younger people coming behind us, that like you can get clean and stay clean. And like steps still make sense. With 17 years clean. Going to meetings still makes sense at 17 years clean. Like calling my sponsor and going over that step work still makes sense with 17 years clean. And it's not so much that I think I'm going to go leave here and go use, but it's because I need some accountability in my life. Accountability not so much that, like I said, I think I'm going to use, but like in my personal and professional life. Somewhere I can come back to, and like days when I feel like I can't share, a home group member will be like, "How you doing today?" And I'll give them the pre-recorded answer. "Never had it so good." You know? "I'm fine. Great. Living my best life." And then they'll be like, "Well, how you really doing?" And you're like, "Well, I mean, if you got time, you know." And tell them like life is like, you know, whatever the case is. You know? So with the sixth step, it talks about like right out the gate with the sixth step that we find that if we're not greedy, we're never satisfied, right? And it's funny that all the steps begin with we. That the I must die to be the we. That I've had to learn through the step process and the years of being in recovery how to like put the ego down, how to put the arrogance down, how to put the self-righteousness down. And then what I found out along the way of recovery, I remember getting clean and thinking that I wanted to have a year clean. Then I want to have 5 years clean. Then I want to hit the 10 years clean. I can't wait. Look, I really can't wait to have 18. That's one of the milestones for me. I can't wait to have 18 years. Some people are like, "Oh, you're getting so old." Look, I didn't think I'd be 21. Look, I can't wait to get to 18 years old and then like, you know, tell somebody, "Look, I've been clean as long as you've been alive." I can't wait to say that. I know some people, you know, I know some people like, they don't like when they don't like when the other kids come up to them and be like, "Oh, you've been clean as long as I've been alive." Oh, I can't wait for that conversation. You know what I'm saying? And especially like, look, one of the benefits, if you don't know, like if you're young in recovery and you're getting clean, look, check this out. You'll look younger as you get more time. And then if you do step work, you go to step meeting, you get involved in service. And then sometimes old timers, they will get on their soapbox and they'll start using literature to justify positions that the literature has nothing to do with. And then you'll want to be like, "Excuse me. It doesn't say that, or that's not the meaning or the purpose of what you just read." And then you'll go back and forth to the debate, and this old timer will think that you're so young that you got like a hot 90 days. And they'll look, when they run out of options, they go with like the uppercut, like, "Well, how much time you got?" Look, when you got 10 years, you drop that on them, and they weren't expecting you to say that. Look, it's a game changer, I promise you. So that's just some of the benefits if you stay around. Like you get clean young, you stay clean, do some service, and you can have that kind of conversation. Look, it's the benefits, right? Anyways. So the point I'm trying to make is that like with the steps, like the we process, that I have to do what you've done in order to get what you've gotten. And a part of that, I've had to learn how to listen so I could listen to learn. That God gave me two ears and one mouth to do more listening than talking. And that two people are talking, and then nobody is listening. Because I remember early on in my recovery, I didn't understand that there would be times that early on in my recovery, I would be listening with the intent to rebuttal. And that's still not listening. That listening is an art. Listening is being able to take out all whatever my judgments or past experience are and put them to the wayside in order to be present in the moment and not thinking about all the biases I have or all the past experiences that might skew my judgment based on like, you know, I remember when I first got clean, depending on what you look like, act like, dress like, male, female, whatever, like I would start to discount your message early on in my recovery. And didn't realize that I was doing the same thing others had done to me when I got clean. I didn't realize that I had to learn how to like not only take the mask off, but I had to learn how to quiet the noise. And the only way I could learn how to quiet the noise is by listening to other people's experience, strength, and hope. That's why we call it that. Through your experiences, I get the strength that like just maybe if you did it, I can overcome it too. And then the hope, helping other people every day. And part of helping other people every day, not only, you know, might give me hope, but in the process might give somebody else hope too. Like I'm not one of these people that helps people because it helps me, because that's selfish. Like recovery is not convenient. But what happens is that somebody was inconvenienced by as many phone calls and badgering them. And my sponsor, like one time, was like, "Are you calling me to argue?" And I was like, "Ooh, you're probably right. But that's because I remember getting clean and think I had an anger issue and didn't realize I didn't have anger issues. I had the inability to identify what I was feeling and didn't have a healthy, productive way to go through that. And so what I realized is that it wasn't that I had anger issues, I had a feeling challenge. I didn't know how to deal with, like, you know, when I was using, all I knew was happy, mad, and sad. So now that I'm in recovery, like, and I'm not using because I use for the feeling of numb. for the absence of pain. So when I got here and people would ask me how I felt, I didn't know how I felt. But what happened is, over a period of time, by as I worked the steps and got to that fourth and fifth, and I made this searching and fearless more inventory, I started to itemize different defects as well as assets of character. And I realized by the time I got to sixth that, like, yes, I've made bad decisions, but it doesn't make me a bad person. And that, like, also in the course of my recovery, that ambition without satisfaction is greed. Like, there have been so many times in my life where I have this ambition to want to hit these goals just to get to the goal, and there's always another goal, and then I realize I'm never appreciating the exact moment and the work I've done to get to that goal because I'm so busy getting to the next one that I have no reflection time to even be in the moment to appreciate what I have. And then I'm just wasting my moments because I'm so looking into the future that I don't know how to be in the present and realize the gift. And then one of the things that, like, you know, I've been talking about the last, I started about 2 years ago, is I started logging what I would consider perfect moments in my life. When I have what is a perfect moment for me, I log it in my calendar to remind me. Because it's real easy to get caught up in the what if only, what I don't have, what I should have had, what should have happened. And then I forget about all the perfect moments I've had in my life. And I get to reflect back on them because it's real easy to minimize all the good things. Like being here at this convention can minimize, well, there's not all these people. No. Like, you just never know whose life you're going to impact. Like, the only thing that matters after all this is how many lives I've touched and how many lives have touched mine. That's all that matters when my life is over. That's the only thing that will matter. And so, like, my last perfect moment, Mark just happened to be there. I don't know, I think Brian was there too. We were at the park meeting. And we have this park meeting, Las Solas, on Sunday nights. And we had a couple people that were picking up medallions, like, dude, you know, a guy and girl that I both know really well. And then what also happened is this is, you don't see it all the time, at least I don't, is that all the key tags were picked up that night.
Oh.
All of them. And medallions were given. Then the speaker was like crushing it. And while that's happening, and this is in a park on the intercoastal, water boats flying by, and like Florida at night, like the weather was like perfect. I mean, just crushing the recovery scene. There's young people, there's old people, people celebrate big time, little time. And then while that's happening, there's this little party going on over in the corner of regular people, because it's in a park, so anybody can come. And like, yo, they got this R&B, they got the Alicia Keys rocking. Like, it was such a vibe. I was like, yo, I gotta log this thing. I was like, I mean, the vibe was just so right, but it's learning how to appreciate those moments, because I can get so caught up in the ambition of life that I forget how satisfied my spirit is, because if it wasn't for people, the older times, the predecessors, the people that are involved in service, that open the doors up, that make the coffee, set up the chairs, that are, you know, doing what they need to do to have an atmosphere of recovery, then people like me would have no place to go when I need to be there when I need it the most. And it's not for me to discount, regardless of what happens in the meeting. I'm just glad that I have a place to come. Because too many times in the past, I would get caught up in self-righteousness and ego that, oh, I feel worse than I did before I got there. Yo, the point wasn't for me to get the message. The point was that I just need to show up. Because left to my own devices, even with time clean, I can still tell myself the most outrageous nonsense and start to co-sign it, because don't you know how much time I have? Don't you know how many steps I've worked? How many this? You know, start doing the inventory. But like, what I've realized is in my recovery that part of that sixth step is that becoming entirely ready. Since we become entirely ready to have these defects of character removed or whatever, it doesn't say that God removes anything. It says, I become entirely ready. And what happens is, as I'm writing out, like, you know, my defects and going over, and I'm seeing patterns of behavior in my fourth and fifth, and then I can start to identify, like, ego. Like, most of my defects are assets that I abuse. Like, ego and pride, there's nothing wrong with ego. Is like self-confidence, if you will, or how you view yourself. That's what the definition of ego is. But I can become egocentric when I think that it's all about me. Or pride. There's nothing wrong with me taking pride in my work. But what will happen is that my ego and pride will have me work steps harder than anybody else, but then can't hear the message from anybody else because I want to criticize or critique the way you're sharing the message. the job, my ego and pride will have me going around the jobs, playing Superman, doing all this stuff that they didn't ask me to do, but I'm just doing because, look, I love what I do and I'm going to do it. But then let me not get a day off, or if I need to take a half a day, and they're like, no. And then I want to be like, well, don't you see all this stuff that I've done? And they're like, okay. Like, sometimes I've had to realize that, like, if they pay me to be Clark Kent, then maybe I should be Clark Kent. I don't need to fly around and play Superman. I'm talking about even in my relationships. Sometimes I just need to play Clark Kent in my relationships because empathy can become codependency real quick. I'm talking about when love turns into enabling, when you start to love people to death. I'm talking about, I've been in relationships where they started using and then invited into my home and let them use in my home and didn't feel comfortable enough coming to a Narcotics Anonymous even to share about it, because God forbid, what would you think about me with time clean that I was letting somebody use in my house? I'm sleeping with the disease, don't know how to tell it to leave because of the fear of being alone now. That I'll never find this again, and you know, you need to do the right thing, helping the sick, sad, you know, using the recovery lingo to justify the position. Although there are other times in my recovery, because it talks about in the sixth step that, like, we find comfort in familiar pain. It's easier to stay in what we know for fear of the future. So I don't want to let you go because I don't want to be in that state of loneliness. Because loneliness will start to, like, you know, when the COVID thing happened and then you're single, like, people aren't going out like they used to. And then you really got to sit with yourself. And then you start entertaining the most outrageous nonsense where you look, you start walking around, you start looking on Facebook, and then you're thinking about texting somebody, like, I shouldn't text this old person that, you know what I mean? And you think about texting old relationships and stuff like that, and you write the message, you take it out, and then, like, you know, you hit it, it's like smoking crack all over again, because now you wait and see what the response is being, you don't know what's going to be. And the whole time, all I had to do is have enough humility in the seventh step to reach out and tell somebody about the insane thinking I had. But too many times, like I said, I'll get caught up in, what are they going to think about? I mean, I'm still going to sound like a lame. You know what I'm saying? I'm a grown man. I shouldn't be feeling like this. No. It's a fact that I have feelings. The feelings aren't always a fact. And then I learned that there's a difference between loneliness and being lonely. Like, it's okay. Like, I'm okay being alone most of the time. But if the disease can, for one second, get me to believe that I'm lonely, that's why nobody's calling. That's why nobody invited you to do this. You'll start scrolling on Facebook. That's why nobody invited you to do this, that, and the third. Because of the, you know, I'll start searching and fearless more inventory of all the things that I don't have, or, you know, that I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy of, I'm not deserving of. If the disease can get me to believe that, it'd be like, see, nobody cares. You know, my disease today, it doesn't say go use, it says go kill yourself. Go kill yourself. Because you're not worthy of. Nobody cares. They're not going to miss you. Thank God for the gift of recovery, though. I'm talking about, like, in the sixth step, like, you were talking about lust, and, like, you know, love and lust are very tricky. Lust is, what can you do for me? Love is, what can I do for you? And how do I balance that? Because the definition of lust is an unbridled desire. And I've, like, in my recovery, I've lusted over food. We were talking about this earlier. You know, my boy back home in Florida talks about, like, you know, he'd be shooting Big Macs and, like, sniffing milkshakes from McDonald's and shit like that. And I'd be like, I'm like, you ain't wrong. For me, like, you know, I walk up to the donut shop and I'm like, look, if I want to have one, I might as well go ahead and get six in case, like, later on in the day. And then once I get there, then all of a sudden, like, oh, I want some extra butter popcorn at about 10 o'clock at night. And then, like, you know, the depression really kicks in because now I'm on one. And then, then I don't want to get out of bed. Can't get out of bed. Want to blame everybody else. I can't believe this is happening. You know what I mean? I'm talking about, like, in the seventh step, when it talks about humbly asking God to remove our shortcomings, it talks about humbly asking God. I'm talking about getting to a place where I start demanding God to do things and things go my way, but instead asking God for the clarification and not keep repeating the same thing expecting different results, because I can't tell you how many times I've went through the lesson to get to the blessing just to repeat the class. You know what I'm saying? They say insanity is doing the same thing, expecting different results. But what happens when you continue to do the same thing, knowing what the results are going to be, and you do it anyways? That's addiction. I'm talking about like, yo, I ate through my feelings, and I blew up at one point. And all the depressed felt like I couldn't get out of bed, didn't want to get out of bed. Would show up to a meeting, I'd show up early because I didn't want to talk to people. I wasn't there to be of service. You know what I'm saying? But then I'd roll out. Oh, you know, I got this going on. Making up excuses. And had to find that newfound sense of humility, that honesty, that like in the beginning of our literature, what is the Narcotics Anonymous program? We don't care like where you use, who you are, age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, lack of religion. All we want to know is, what is your problem? How can we help? I remember thinking that there were things that I couldn't share here because, God forbid, what would you think about me? And then what I came to find out was, I'll share a quick story. So there was a time where I remember coming to a meeting and I didn't get the hug that I thought I should have got. And then ego kicks in. Oh, how come they didn't hug me? It's because, you know, I don't have the car, I don't have the rims or the watch or the fresh sneakers, I don't have the douchebag haircut of the week or the fresh fitted or the Jordans or the... I just start going through this searching and just start to beat myself to death and start to feel this embarrassment and deep shame and guilt over stuff that, like, you know, is unrealistic and fantasy, whatever the case is. And what I came to find out was, is that it's funny how, like, feeling versus doing. Because I felt like that in that moment and didn't realize the reason that person didn't come up and give me a hug is because they were already going through something and the meeting was getting ready to start. And this isn't Showtime at the Apollo where they're just going to get up, walk across the room just because I walked through the door. But it's funny how my mind can flip situations. Like in the 6th and 7th, it's about starting to change the behavior. It talks about the self-acceptance pamphlets that our defects will always be a part of us, and the only way we overcome those defects is by a change in how we live. I only feel the way I feel because I think the way I think, but I can't always think my way into a new way of living. Sometimes I have to live my way into a new way of thinking. Like I remember when someone approached me, when we started an argument, and normally I would react and want to fight. And I realized in that moment is that when I would have those kind of situations, the first action was anger, but that's not what was happening. What would happen is I would feel embarrassed. My ego would kick up. Don't you know him? All this other stuff. And I remember coming to a meeting and talking about it. They said, like, yo, sometimes you just got to, like, walk away. And I said, yo, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. So they said, well, just try it. Try it. Suggestion. The only time suggestion calls someone is when you don't take it. I said, sure enough, you got it. Kicked off, coming out the side of his neck. I said, you know what? Okay. And just walked away. Now, as I walked away, the disease was like, you're lame. You're soft. Recovery's making you soft. Everybody's going to try you because I'm living off past experience. That vulnerability is a weakness. That if you show vulnerability, you're going to get taken advantage of. So I get home, sitting in bed. You'll never believe what happens. Nothing. Not only did nothing happen, when I went to the meeting the next day, you know what happened? Nothing. What's even crazier, a week later, you know what did happen? That somebody had seen the exchange and that I walked away and came up to me and said, yo, I seen what happened the other day, man. I just want to know, like, I struggle with that. How did you get through that? And then all of a sudden, I'm like, well, you know, I'm out here working a program, you know what I'm saying? Crack some, like, you know, humility and acceptance and stuff like that, you know what I'm saying? But, like, what I learned in that situation is that some of the worst things that have ever happened to me never happened. I just got to watch when my disease tries to create the narrative. But by the time I get to step 7 and I'm humbly asking God to remove the shortcoming, it doesn't say that, you know, God's going to remove anything again. But what I realize as I'm praying about what's going on in my life, I have the recognition of who I don't want to be. And my entire ready to let go of the image that I've created for myself. And that when God is putting people in my life, it's not for me to judge you on your age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, how much time, how little time. Instead, like, yo, you're an instrument just like I'm an instrument. And who am I to deny God the ability to speak to you through you to me? Because sometimes I need to see the God in you to recognize the God in me. Because I never know who's going to have the experience I need. Like, you know, somebody was shared earlier, like, you know, It talks about, like, yo, just because we get clean doesn't exempt us from having to walk through painful situations. And it also talks in step 7 at the very end, it talks about that no longer do we have to go through life, and when we face challenges, that they have to be these major tragedies or catastrophes, but instead we have a choice to look at every situation however we want, and can walk through those situations with integrity. You know, like, I remember, like, you know, at the end of a relationship, and I remember telling her, like, yo, I love you and want you to be happy, even if that's not with me. And that sometimes the most loving thing you can do for somebody is to leave them alone. Like, having enough humility that I don't feel the need to, like, enforce my want onto you. But instead, just want what you want, even if it's not what I want, but love you enough to let you, like, walk out the door. Like, I don't have to take hostages today. You know? I don't have to be so wrapped up in that defect of lust or love or whatever. But the thing is that even in Living Clean, it talks about that sometimes I'll be talking to somebody and it'll be an exciting conversation, and that's all it is excitement. I'll think it's passion. I'll think it's connection. Oh, wow, we vibing. No, sometimes it's just good conversation, you know? Today, I don't have to run off. Like, fantasy is still my favorite drug of choice. But then I've also learned that, like, yo, I can be loyal to a fault. Like, I can stay loyal to a job that no longer serves me, but scared to death that I might not find another job. And then you were talking about that fear and faith can't live in the same house, or whatever, you know, fear is a lack of faith. No, what I've realized is that I have to practice faith while walking through fear if I want perseverance. Because the sixth step and seventh is about having the perseverance to keep going even when rebellion kicks up. When I don't want to feel the way I'm feeling because it's uncomfortable, the change. Learning how to be alone. Learning that every opportunity doesn't mean it's my opportunity. And having enough humility when they come to me and say, do you want the position? Being able to turn it down when I know that I'm not ready for it. Or when that relationship presents, and that because, like, you know, I want to have a good time. You want to have a good time? And learning, like, yo, sometimes everything that feels good physically isn't good for the spirit. I can't tell you how many times I've chased desire, got done, got up, hated myself, because I instant gratification, they call it instant because it doesn't last. That's why it's instant. But what will happen is I'll settle for that when really what I want is fulfillment. And that relationships aren't found, they're built. And I learned how to build relationships through my 6 and 7 because it's a conversation with God based on my behaviors, asking God for clarification and having enough humility that whatever challenge is in front of me, having an opportunity to overcome that if I choose to, instead of looking at it like I'm being punished. No, if God was punishing me, I'd be using. I wouldn't have been given the gift of desperation. I wouldn't have been shown this new way of life. Like, just recently, you know, I've been seeing somebody, and, you know, it's been whatever, and then I just shared it with, I was like, hey, look, I got to place a boundary with you. They say, this isn't a boundary, you're punishing me. I said, well, sure, it would feel like punishment being that nobody has ever set a boundary with you. A couple other paragraphs came in. But today, I can respond. I don't have to react. I know when someone's trying to prompt me for the fight. Because if you've been in, I've been in unhealthy relationships in the past where they enjoy the confrontation and the argument because, look, I used to be comfortable in the chaos and confusion. Today, I recognize it and realize that I have a choice whether to participate or not. And when they got done saying whatever they were saying or whatever the case is, I told her, I was like, you have spoke your peace. I don't feel the need to defend mine. Have a good night. Today, I don't have to abuse you verbally because I'm good at that. One of the challenges with being in recovery, there's a double-edged sword that the more I know about me, I also know about you. And I can recognize that and use it against you. And I used to build cases on people. There's no humility in that. Humility is like without arrogance. Like today, the greatest thing about the 6 and 7, the humbly asking God to remove the shortcomings is no longer if I choose, I don't have to fall short on behavior as long as I'm willing to be honest about what it is that I want to do. Because if not, I'll be back to talk about the obsession that I wasn't willing to be honest with after I acted out on it, and it became a shortcoming. Just like this newfound empathy and understanding that when I'm in a meeting and someone drops a sober bomb, like, I don't have to blow them up in the middle of the meeting like, "Oh, sir!" Or it'll be like, you know, alcoholic addict, and, you know, I used to, you know, well, I mean, once in a great while I still do it, but like, I used to do it all the time, like, "Yo, that's $2, dog. That's $2. You got it? That's $2. You know what I'm saying? And used to make a thing about it. And the reality is I, you know, I remember wanting to be the NA police when I got here. And the reality is, like, where's the humility in that? That's not love. Don't kid yourself. Because I've learned how to come to them in a loving and caring way after the meeting. Because I'm going to tell you right now, if you embarrass me in front of that many people, I'm going to tell you right now, it would go a lot different than just walking out and never coming back again. So if this is supposed to be an atmosphere of recovery, I've learned that when the other person is up and they're sleeping with half the meeting, I've learned how to approach them on the side that I know how much pain you have to be in to feel that you need to have these many relationships to keep the ego and pride up. But I'm going to tell you right now, when you come up off of that, the feeling you're going to feel, because whatever goes up has to come down. And the reason I know that is because I've been right where you are. And like, I want to tell you, when you get to the end, you feel disgusting, you can't wash that feeling off, and you feel like you can't come here and talk about it, because now the very place that you're supposed to find comfort, you create a room of toxicity because of what you created. Because I know what it's like to come here and play the victim, although I was the volunteer the entire time. And had to have enough honesty with self that when I'm sick and tired, or tired of being sick, then maybe I should just be honest. I want to change the behavior. But it's not enough just to talk about it. That there's just change that, like, I had to learn how to, like, come home and not turn on the TV or radio. Like, for, like, a minute at a time. 5 minutes at a time. I had to learn how to, like, go to the movies by myself. I had to learn how to sit up front and read a reading. I had to learn that it was okay to share whatever's going on in my life at a meeting, and that, like, when people tell you that everything is NA material, well, I can show you in the green and gold where it talks about anything that affects your life is sharing material. And that, like, one of the other things, if you're scared to death to share and have enough humility to get honest, check this out. Yo, I'm a big coffee drinker. Big coffee drinker, right? Some would say an addict, maybe, possibly. You know what I'm saying? In 17 years, right, after everything I've ever shared, right, Mark's been around, he's heard me share it all, so, you mean, he can testify. In 17 years, all the crazy nonsense I've ever shared, never once have I been in a Starbucks, Dunkin' Donuts, Royal Farms, 7-Eleven, whatever, copping coffee, that someone has run up to me and been like, "Yo, you're the dude that talked about stepping out of the relationship," or the dude that did it, you know. Never has that ever happened. But I can't tell you how many times I've been in a meeting dying on the inside, wanting to raise my hand to share, but so scared of what you guys would think about me, just to share it. Nobody ever came back to me. Because the reality is, it's gossips. Gossip is just secrets that haven't been shared in an open format. Once I share what's going on in my life with you, what you choose to do with it is your business. It's not any of mine anyways. Because it came from me. So what you do with it is up to you, because I've already said it. There's no gossip. It's my truth. It's the pain that brings me here. It's the love that keeps coming back. Thanks, let me share.
Thank you, Donna and John and everyone else, for a great meeting. And we're going to close from our seats with a serenity prayer.